Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. Who's signed on? I know you guys are here. I see on my dashboard. Who's gonna be bold enough to say hi first? Anyone? Well, I'm gonna wait a minute. If you're on mute, it's star 6 to unmute. Let me preface some of what we're about to do. I'd like to begin with a check-in, wins, progress notes, that sort of thing. I want to discuss your perspectives, your professional fee stories. I have a couple sent in at my request for colleagues who had other commitments because I thought it would be useful for you to hear them, and another request from someone who's here, but I'd particularly like to hear the kinds of professional fee stories or questions that you have, and let's talk about your experiences in just a moment, and any recommendations that you have, as well as questions, and then I'll share some thoughts that I've put together. They don't deserve the dignity of calling them a verbal white paper. There's white paper should not be in this description, but these are some thoughts I've put together and compiled on this subject that I wanted to share with you in three areas that I thought would be helpful to you. But first, let's do a check-in. Who's here and who would like to say hi? Anyone? I'm getting lonely here. Anyone? Can you all hear me okay?
Hey, Dave, it's Lori Bunting. I'm on the line, but
okay,
I'm here.
Lori, welcome. Thank you. I was getting lonely.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, welcome. Thanks. The weather was getting cold up there in the east, especially, and I thought you guys were bundled in. Well, let's begin with just a check-in. I don't know. I'll reiterate what I said or a summary of it in just a moment. Check-ins, introduce yourselves and what's going on.
Hi, Dave. This is Jerry Brown Jim Blanco. How are you?
Welcome. How are you? Great.
Well, thank you. I had problems getting in because it wasn't acknowledging the PIN number correctly. It was weird, so I had to call back, so I apologize for that.
That may be. That may be. We usually have a bounding set of voices, and there was the indication of only two or three. That may be a problem.
It was, because the three wasn't being identified. So it was just saying your PIN number 97, and I was pressing the three as the
okay.
So that might be the issue.
Okay, well, thanks. That's good.
You're welcome.
We'll wait a few minutes then. Lori, what's going on?
Oh, well, I'm just really looking forward. I'm excited to be on the call to learn from other coaches that have experience, and then to, you know, I'm just here to learn. I don't have much to contribute since my coaching practice has not yet launched.
Okay. Well, I know you are joined by some fellow very recent graduates, so I know a number of people are in the same boat. So who else? Anybody else want to check in? Must be some significant problems getting into the line.
You might want to check it, Dave, because it was. It took me like three attempts.
Okay. I don't have my dashboard on, and I can't put it on at this time, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
I know we're recording, so whatever we talk about will be recorded, even if other people have problems getting in or kind of stagger that. At this point, we had agreed to talk about professional fees, collecting professional fees. What kind of questions do you have? What would you like to be sure that we cover in this discussion?
Oh, hi, Dave. This is PJ, and I'm in Houston.
Hey,
and hello, everybody.
PJ, did you have any trouble getting on the line?
No, I didn't have any trouble. I'm calling from a landline, And I disabled my call waiting using *70, and I just dialed in the number, put the PIN in, and followed it with a pound sign. And
well, that's the watershed moment. That's exactly what will work. So how are you?
Oh, I'm excellent. Very, very happy to be on the call with you and in the company of the other. I'm going to say the coaches, so it feels really good. The question I have today is building confidence. I'm hoping you can share some resources for building confidence in charging our fees. I did look over the work Lisa did, and the fees are all over the place, and I think that's largely a result of people charging fees from their own financial or their own money story, just to put it back in the terms of what we talk about here. So I need to break out of that. I told my daughter my fees were $150, and she said, well, what's wrong with charging $200? And, you know, and I had to think, now, is $150 my set point, or why did I just arbitrarily pick that number? So I'm looking for confidence in getting to that gulp factor you talk about.
Okay. And in the meantime, confidence is a place you get to, and comfortable is a place you get to. In the meantime, you just do it as if you were confident and comfortable, and say it and do it, and you'll live into it. So we'll come back to that, though. I think you ask some important questions, and those are questions I think everyone has, and questions I had at the beginning of practice. And that's why I want to address these, because of the very things you've mentioned. And we've just begun to talk about that in this group before. The fees are all over the place. There are some important factors. And I put together some things to think about that I think will be of benefit. There are a couple of coaches who couldn't join us who agreed to share their experience in setting and collecting fees of what's worked for them. A couple of people, if they're able to get on the line, and I apologize for whatever difficulties is from the telebridge, who are going to share their experiences with us. So at this point, I just want to be sure we get all the questions, all the scope of things you'd like to be sure that we address during this time. So we'll use it really as a mentor group more focused on this topic than we usually do. So what other things, as you check in, what kind of question or questions do you have about the setting and collecting of professional fees that you want to be sure we focus on?
Dave, it's Lori Bunting here, and I would love to cover the idea, as you've encouraged me to do, with setting a monthly retainer. My question and sort of discussion that I wanted to have around that is, what do you do when you encounter somebody who is reticent and just says, you know, oh, I really don't like my, you know, I like to be able to reset every month or do it by the visit. And so I'd love that to be addressed.
Okay, definitely. I think that will occur. I think it is unlikely when you state your recommendation and what that involves and your fee structure, and that you do it by telephone or you just include in a very succinct way. I think it's unlikely, but I think it may occur in some circumstances. And I think we will definitely get to that. I'd ask for a management of the background noise. There's some shuffling or some kind of noise. I'm not sure what it is. You're probably not picking it up in your microphone, but anytime you move or anytime that your microphone is touched, it'll generate a sound. So if you'll do *6 to mute until you're ready to talk. So thanks, Lori. What other questions do we have?
Dave?
Yes.
Hi, it's Jamie Meyer. How are you?
Hey, great. How are you?
Good. Nice to hear your voice. I and everybody, I'm really happy to be here.
Your cat is sitting on your lap desk right now as we're talking, right?
Well, actually, you're psychic, Dave. She's actually on a tall bookcase looking over like a, like some sort of gargoyle, but she's close by, yes.
Thank you, Facebook, for, you know. Go ahead, Jamie.
Maggie. I'm calling, you know, I'm not calling with any specific advice or any solution, but because I did sit for that, you know, the National Board Health and Wellness Exam last fall, I was privy to the preparation, and the preparation was really amazing because it was across a wide spectrum of materials coming from the nursing community and psychology and so on and so forth. And I just want to throw into the pot here, because I know you as an executive coach are in a position to charge, you know, really, really market rates. But in the world of health and wellness coaching anyway, at least from entities like Humana and companies that are actually hiring people in that capacity, the rates are set at a pretty astonishingly low level. Now, I don't desire at this point in my career to work for those entities, but I just want to mention that because that is a reality of an emerging profession. And there is a great need for people doing wellness coaching, as I'm sure you know. But there are some very specific scales out there for how people may be compensated if they pursue one of those positions. Again, it's not something I want to pursue. I have my own business, but there's a real wide spectrum.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something to consider, because there is a definite analogy of what Jamie's mentioning about working within an organization, whether that's healthcare, insurance, or some related kind of organization, to do coaching for people they refer. It's very analogous to internal coaching for an organization. It's kind of a variant of that, because you are subject to the fees, the scale, the parameters of what the organization determines. So that's a big decision initially, is if you want to say yes to that. The payoff is that you get clients that you may not have to generate marketing for. It's also balanced by the fact that you don't determine who you're referred, and you don't determine your fee necessarily. So those are all things to consider, and that's an important variation, just as those of you who consider doing internal coaching for an organization or join an organization like Vistage or the alternate board, where you're trained by them and they set fees for your executive coaches that are in your group, and they determine a lot of policy. So those are all important considerations in terms of the structure if you want to consider any of those, and those are in juxtaposition to a total private practice model. As we've been talking about. So thanks, Jamie, for highlighting that, and I think that's an important consideration. Jamie is a particular resource. If any of you have any questions, if you're okay with me mentioning this, Jamie, she successfully passed with flying colors the accreditation for wellness coaches nationally, and that is something that the New Life Story Wellness Coaches Training is certified or accredited by that group now to apply to sit for that exam. Jamie sat for it successfully first round and did amazingly well, and has offered this group before any kind of resources about how to prepare for it. And that group has a great deal of preparation essentials, and I will send to this group anything I get from them. They're about to have a round of the studies, as Jamie mentioned, for preparation for that. And it's a great continuing education in and of itself.
Thanks, Dave.
So, thanks. Yeah, thank you. That's super. What else? What other questions or areas of focus would you like to have for our discussion? Well, how about, there are a couple of things that have been sent in because the people could not come, and they've given me permission to, you know, fully use these. Is Kay McConney here?
Yes, I joined the line. Hello, everyone. How are you?
Great. Would you like to lead off, since you're live, time about just sort of sharing what your structure is? And the benefit of this is that the examples that we're going to hear are very divergent. And Kay's is a particular model that she operates globally. So it's a really interesting possibility here, and does, you know, actually live time in different countries, and operates from Canada. So would you just sort of give us a succinct overview of your approach to professional fees and the structure and the specifics of that?
Absolutely. Hello, everyone. I'm out of Canada, as Dave would have mentioned. Much of my work is done in Canada and the Caribbean. I have divided my client groups into four distinct groups. And that's one because of necessity, and another because that's kind of our sweet spot where we like to code. The first group, the four groups are international development programs and projects. So, for example, we do work coaching with international development agencies who do work in developing countries. And usually we do training for them, what they call capacity building work. And as a part of that work is usually coaching. So that's one of our client groups, international development projects and programs. A second group, particularly in the Caribbean region, is government and nonprofit organizations. And that's a specific group because they have some unique characteristics, and therefore how we charge to them will differ. A third group is we run a coaching timeshare program. Where you can buy a timeshare in, say, a house or a hotel or somewhere around the world. For those of you who do the vacation day on timeshare, we set a coaching timeshare. That is a program that is uniquely to those clients with whom we also do training, because our approach is we use training to seed coaching. So many of our coaching clients will come through the door of training first. And then fourth area is our general, what we call our corporate rates. So those four areas. So for international development projects, the way we set our fees is based on policy. Many international development funding agencies, they have a cap. You cannot charge any more than X per hour for certain services. And secondly, you cannot charge a retainer for those services. You are forced to use an hourly rating because they use what's called a level of effort. That's an hourly assessment. So for our international development project, we charge about $150 per hour for our coaching. And that's because it's capped, and that's because that's what's required. For the second client group, which is the Caribbean region, mostly government and nonprofit organizations, we use a formula that looks at salary level, cost of living, foreign currency adjustments for those countries who have different currencies, which are obviously not U.S. dollars, and then what's the price tolerance for the particular market. Because we are dealing with government and nonprofit organizations, their salary level is not very high. The cost of living in different countries, that varies. Different countries use different foreign currency adjustments. So, understanding that we're coming out of Canada, we still use the U.S. as the standard, even when we do our foreign collaboration. And we charge them, that's government nonprofit organizations, U.S. $100 an hour. Now, when it comes to our coaching timeshare program, we sell basically what happens is that groups have people who have trained with us. They can form groups of two or more persons and pool their resources to reserve coaching sessions in bulk, and they share that time among their members, however they like. We start with 30 sessions. And that 30 sessions, usually start with 30 sessions at about $5,000 plus whatever is the applicable tax at the time, which is usually about 13%. and you get your 30 sessions internal to the group. They divide that time up however they would like, and when they're ready to top up, it's just like an account. You just deposit more hours in your account, and that's 30 sessions is start at 5,000. And that money has to be paid up front before we start coaching anyone as part of that group. And then our third part, which is our general corporate, I suppose, that's what we call it, corporate, our corporate rate, is a retainer, $1,125 per month plus 13% tax. And that's for 45-minute sessions. So we have very specific client groups, and our rates differ whether it's cost of living, salary, or market conditions, or whether it's a cap because of policy, or whether or not you happen to be a part of a training program. For our coaching timeshare, I should tell you, we don't use our coaching sessions to make money. We break even on those pretty much. We make our money on the training. And then we train into seed coaching, which helps them embed the training through practice. And then we coach them through practice. So that's how we do ours on the coaching side.
Okay, thanks so much. And I want to open it for questions that people have of you. But first, a question, because this has come up with individual mentor coaching and as well as with training. What do you do about the currency conversion rates?
The simple thing is, for example, you have a country, let's pick Barbados. They have a fixed parity to the US dollar since 1971. So what happens is straight 2-to-1. For every one US dollar, so we charge 150, it basically comes to 300. Different countries do fluctuations. What we do is we charge them the exchange rate at the date of invoice.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, it does. Thank you so much for sharing that. One simple version of that that I do is either PayPal or OneShop and send the link for a fee, like a monthly retainer, and then the entity, if that's OneShop, they do the conversion. Or if you do PayPal, they do the conversion. So you don't have to have an economist on your staff to figure out all this, and it's just an easy thing. But it does fluctuate, and I've had clients in Australia, you know, South Africa, even Canada, talk about how different the rates are at time from month to month. So that's that's a component.
Yes, it is. It is. And we started using PayPal years ago, and I stopped because the fees. I didn't like the fees.
Okay.
And what we have done now is we have bank accounts in different countries so people can write their checks or do their transfers locally based on whatever conversion we have used today. But equally, there's one place we have where we have now collaborated with a partner who does have a registered account and bank account in that country. And we do what you call like a flow through. Where
okay.
Those clients can pay locally in that country, and the flow through arrangement is a partnership really that we have for managing the finances in that way.
Okay. Any questions of Kate?
Kate, is there a website for us to go to get more information?
To this information, no. To get information on my company, yes.
Yes.
We have Executive Minds. That's the name of our company. We are in the process of relaunching we have now upgraded our website. We are perhaps 3/4 there, so there should be a new site up. Our date is the 15th of February. That's what we're working on, and trust that we will be up and relaunched by then. But you can go to theexecutiveminds.com at the moment.
So for the rest of the today, it's www.executivemind.com.
Executive Minds.
Service.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kay, for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
Dave?
Yes.
Dave, this is Lauren Smith. I just wanted to make sure you knew I was on the line.
Welcome. Hey, great to have you. We're talking about different aspects and perspectives of professional fees, getting some questions, and then some illustrations of what people do, and then I'm going to share some different ideas with you. While you're thinking about what you want to add, there are a couple that I've had sent in, and this is at my request, and they've given me full permission to mention this because I think these illustrate a couple of different perspectives. This is the first one I'm going to do is from Kip Flock. He's on the East Coast, and he's another therapist who saw the light, and he's a mentor coach now. And here's his very succinct summary. I met the mother, Jane, by phone. On client intake, she agreed to the fee of $195 per session to be billed to her credit card at 4 sessions in advance. She was struggling with the health care of her chronically ill son, who is an adult, while battling mounting fatigue and a difficult ex-husband financially and coordinating their son's medical treatment. I realized that the family dynamics were so complicated that one 50-minute session a week would have little impact unless the rest of the family became involved. How could I involve the rest of the family and competently serve them by phone without meeting them first? With some expert supervisory consultation, this is where we came in and consulted, and you know, I urged him to only determine and establish a framework for what he felt he could effectively do, and then to charge a fee about which he had no ambivalence, because this was a complex case, and I shared one experience of mine very similar to this in doing a family coaching consultation that involved different permutations of the family. Decided that I propose, he submitted a proposal that he fly to their city, meet with them for a day, and act as their coach family consultant. After creating action plans for each person and subsystem that day, I would then go on a monthly recurring retainer of $3,150. The fee for the one-day live meeting is $6,000 per day plus half for travel. This was another place on the East Coast, so he could get there easily in a half day. So the total was $9,000. So in other words, this is my recommended day rate if you do a facilitation or a family meeting like this is $6,000 plus half for travel. If it takes you a half day to get there, that's one day if you do both ends. So half of $9,000 is $4,500. Half of $6,000. Half of $6,000 is $3,000, so a total of $9,000 to be paid in advance. The agreement, which has been finalized, included airfare, hotel, and miscellaneous expenses. So then he details the suggested configuration of how he meets with who during that day and sends them an agenda. So that's the important thing I only want to mention for purposes of time here is the framework of that. Of that configuration having to do with professional fees. And the agreement is to schedule ongoing post-family meeting phone sessions for that $3,150 that KIPP determines who will be on the calls or the conference calls and when, depending on the unfolding events. And he sent them a preset structure and timetable and guidelines for that meeting. So any thoughts about or any questions about that? That's a particular kind of setup. I'm familiar with doing that, and the what he mentioned is not dissimilar from something I've done with families that have really complex situations. Any thoughts or questions?
Dave, I have a question. In the 9,000, did you say that the airfare and his accommodations, the hotel and his food, was included in the 9,000, or he billed that out extra?
Extra.
Oh, okay.
Plus expenses.
So 9,000 for the fee, and then the other things he invoiced the client for.
Exactly.
Okay.
See, that includes the time of the preparation, the scheduling, I mean, the whole agenda and that sort of thing. That we spent, and then what the follow-up needs to be done officially and structured. So the follow-up was the monthly retainer of $3,150 because it's going to involve more than a single telephone call, which he recognized immediately in the beginning. This is going to involve a couple of times a week, maybe different configurations of people on the call, all of which he determines, but he's established that in the beginning as being his call about who's in the room and who's not. They're meeting at a site close to the airport, but it's set up where only he and the designated people or person will be in the room and the other people will be cooling their heels outside of earshot, basically, okay? Does that make sense, and are there other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you one other example. This is from Marguerite O'Neill in Toronto, and she has two structures that she's sent. One is for individual. And she comes from a corporate background. She's an executive mentor coach based in Ontario. She's a former head of an HR for a pharmaceutical company, has an MA in leadership, and describes herself, I love this, the go-to coach for high-potential leaders who want to become CEO-ready. So here's for individual. The investment for a private coaching program with Marguerite is by monthly retainer of $2,200 for 3 or 6 months. Included in the program are resources Marguerite has chosen for that client and a leadership assessment. Marguerite offers a fast action scholarship. This is interesting. If the leader decides within 5 days of the conversation, and the fast action scholarship is $600. She follows up the meeting or call with a client information package and a quick summary of the conversation with the investment details. I like that. You don't get nothing till you send in your stuff. Okay. Once the client information packet has been completed and signed, Marguerite sends a welcome letter to the client with a link to the leadership assessment and engages the client in booking all sessions after the client information package is submitted. It's a great approach. Now, for corporate. The investment for a private CEO-ready coaching program with Marguerite for 6 months is $13,500. Included in that program are resources Marguerite has chosen for that client and a leadership assessment. One-third due at the start of the program, one-third after 3 months, balance at the end. There can also be an arrangement for a monthly retainer as an alternate kind of billing. Marguerite provides a proposal to the client or head of HR for this coaching assignment. Once the proposal, and this is the way to go for an organization to submit a proposal, a one-page proposal that has the understanding of the challenge, the scope, and the fee, what you're going to do, in other words. Marguerite sends a welcome letter to the client with a link to the client information packet and to the leadership assessment. She engages the client in booking all sessions after the client information packet is submitted. Okay, what are your thoughts about that? Questions?
Hello?
Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Kate. I think it's an excellent approach. We also send proposals at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think that has been key because send it one-page proposal, and we have a standard format that we used to for the one-page proposal. Sending that proposal really gets conversation going. And I find that at the end of our proposal, we have a signature at the end so that you don't need to go anywhere else for that to say yes. And then after that, we move into the specifics. I find that I like Marguerite's approach. I really like her approach. I think the extra piece that I like is the scholarship piece and the materials that are specific to that. I have a question, though.
Okay, one second. Let me follow up on that because it is from Kay McConnie that I plagiarized the term internal champion. Would you just, in a very succinct way, Kay, describe in dealing with an organization how you use an internal champion?
Very easily, very, very quickly. I still use them today, most of our contracts through internal champions. Usually we find someone within the organization who has the reputation and the influence within the organization who knows our work. And that person then helps us navigate our way through the organization. They help us figure out who are the people we're to talk to, how are we supposed to position the conversation. Sometimes they make the introduction, sometimes they sit in the room at the first meeting, or sometimes they make the introduction and they leave. And then once we have the process ongoing and we are having the conversations going, there are eyes and ears on the inside who let us know, okay, here's what's happening, here's where the politics is being played, here's where the budget's coming from. Here are the other people you need to get on board. And that internal champion pretty much shepherds us or our proposal through the organization until we get success. And where it is appropriate, because it isn't always so, where we are able to get ongoing contract, there is a 10%.
See, I think that's brilliant. If it were a stock, it would be called insider trading, but this is totally legal, and it's a great way to have information that is collaborative in nature and have someone from the position inside the organization championing your proposal and the ideas, plus giving you initial information about what the primary challenges of the organization are. So thank you again for that. There was a question that I talked over.
I lost my train of thought on that question.
Oh, okay.
But if I could add one thing, that champion can be a person or it can be an organization. We recently got into a new organization through a professional support network of women. I think I had mentioned that we do a program called Engender for female professors in STEM in universities. It was the support group of female professors in STEM who came to us and who has championed that program inside for us. So it was the group of women that actually moved that program. So the champion can be a person or a group.
You know, Marguerite O'Neill, who summary I mentioned, who lives in Ontario, is doing a program for developing mentors in educational organizations. So there's some complementarity that you and she may have. I'll send her a note about that. She'll be listening to this as well. So there may be some synchronicity there. Super.
Excellent.
I want to present, just share some ideas with you, but other questions or other comments or anything else to add first? Okay, well, I will.
Hi, Dave, it's PJ. Kate, I think Kate has been presenting. If you could send a template for the proposal to Dave, and if you're open to that, and then maybe he could send the team or the coaches, send that to the coaches. So I hope you'll think about that.
That would be fine. In fact, the template is a bunch of headings that we actually work, and I can give them all to you right now. And so
it's not fancy.
Do you mind attaching that in an email back to me, and I'll forward it to everybody, because there's going to be a number of people who will be listening to this as the recorded version, and I'll send that as a link or as an attachment when I send the link to the access the download.
No problem. I will send it the headings that we use.
Okay, super. All right, thanks. Okay, I want to talk about some aspects of professional fee setting and collecting in three areas, just for you to think about: framing, expectation, and timing. So first, framing. A price provides a context of value. For example, a $100 shirt marked down to $60 provides a context of value in that the $100 is an initial frame of value. It's an anchor. This is the principle of relativity. We infer value in relationship to something that we know that we can have a measure, a metric for. An example of relativity: whenever three choices are presented, over 80% of the time, people pick the middle choice. So for things that we have no idea about the intrinsic value, we rely a lot more on anchors to compare the price. we see a widget for sale at $25 and the usual price is $50, we have an immediate relative value, we think at least, of $50, even though we have no idea what a widget's really worth. Remember one of your early questions in this area, what do other coaches charge? A professional fee establishes a framework of value. This framework the coach provides may be the only way the client has of determining value. What if at a restaurant you see one deeply discounted lobster? Low prices send definite messages about the value and the nature of the service or product. We infer low quality. We begin thinking something is wrong with it. At least we assume it's inferior to the other things. Because of your expertise and training, you live into the expectations and fulfill the promise of exceptional value for your clients. You bring exponential value to those clients. What you do with each of your clients is change-making and transitional for their personal or professional success or both. Here's an example of framing. In one experiment, those who received discount-priced energy drinks performed worse than those who drink full-priced beverages. And you've heard me mention this before, a study at MIT. Those who received a higher-priced placebo got significantly more benefits than those who received a much lower-priced placebo. The story creates the belief that creates the story. Now, we logically know that prices shouldn't affect performance, value, or pleasure, but they do. We make decisions emotionally because this part of our brain makes decisions way faster than the logical intellectual brain, and it just boots it up to the forebrain to make it conscious and logical and intellectual. So a framework determines meaning. Now, as you know from the study that I mentioned consistently, the Wharton School of Business study about what's the major factor that determines whether someone signs on with professionals for their services or declines it. Confidence is the primary determinant of the frame of value. Confidence is a state of mind. This, I believe, is the most important thing you can do when you make a recommendation to a client for your services. And this is wrapping in PJ's question. One, get in a state of mind where you feel fully confident about what you're going to say. Two, remember the three story components, challenge, development, resolution. Make a clear, succinct, simple one-sentence summary of each of these three components, recommending your professional services, what it includes, and the fee. Then be quiet. Don't elaborate, justify, explain, or try to convince. In my view, the best practice is to clearly, succinctly, and confidently state your best recommendation first, and probably only. This makes it the anchor. Now, what's a fair price? Picasso was supposedly approached by a woman who insisted he paint her portrait. He then turned over a paper placard at the sidewalk cafe, quickly drew his likeness. And she said, "Man, you captured my essence with a few strokes. Amazing. How much do I owe you?" Picasso said, $5,000. "What? How could you want so much? It only took you a few seconds." And Picasso said, "No, ma'am. It took me my entire life and a few more seconds." So, in one sense, the only thing you have to sell is your time. If you look at it in a different way, you bring a lifetime of experience, training, application of expertise, and full engagement to a creative new task of collaborating with someone in mentor coaching. You can be confident that if someone engages with you, it will make a difference for the rest of their lives. Now, that's huge. That's priceless. Yet, you have to establish your professional fee. This may be something to focus on rather than any part, as PJ mentioned, of your money story of wondering if they can afford it. You may have a difficult time factoring knowledge, acquired skills, years spent learning and honing the expertise into a professional fee. Now, my belief and some growing evidence is that your client will not get a full benefit unless you charge your full fee. So what do you want to charge for your services? Remember, comfortable is not a reasonable criteria because you can't begin with comfortable, especially at the beginning part of your practice. Anything new and different is going to create discomfort. And comfortable is a place you get to. So here are four models. The massage model. You charge for a 45-minute unit of time. You and the client go about your business until the client decides to engage you again. Two, the formula of how much you want to make a year, how many hours you want to work, and then calculate that to figure your fee. Three, the Tony Robbins model. $1 million a year plus 10% of increased revenue and profitability. Or four, a simple monthly retainer that reflects your value and communicates that to your client, and you both live into the full measure of the value of the experience and its benefits. Now, that's going to vary if you have a project or if you have something. I'm talking specifically about mentor coaching for simplicity of discussion. So, again, we go back, what's fair? Well, in my view, again, this is all my opinion. In my view, in adulthood, there's no ultimate arbiter of fairness. There is no longer a parent to appeal to settle what's fair. And God does not reach down to influence fairness by her hand at an earthly level. So the adult version of fairness does not exist. Is it fair that a physician makes tens of times as much for the same time with a patient as the nurse, even though the nurse has much more hands-on care, or that a CEO of a publicly traded corporation makes 140 times the average worker? The second area, expectations. Expectations frame the value of our experience in two time periods. Before we experience the purchase, the anticipation period, and during the experience itself. Expectations add value to a purchase we make. We expect it to be positive, prepare for it. Endorphins and dopamine are released, and we are poised for a more positive experience. High expectations increase the pleasure and the anticipation. Our perception and expectation affects the actual experience and performance of the thing itself, the engagement. Expectations have a very real impact in improving performance and changing the outcome, especially in peak performance. So your brand and your internal perception creates expectation in the perception of value. Now, in terms of lived expectation, how do we put this into action? We're motivated to spend money. Even recent studies have shown that to splurge, we are motivated to spend money because we are seeking peak experiences. We imagine how we're going to feel when we do what we're doing, so that's the primary motivation to do what we do. If an item is twice as expensive, buyers essentially assume it's twice as good. A Harvard Business School study actually found that the experience was perceived to be more than twice as good. Remember the Cabernet Sauvignon tasting study that I mentioned? The volunteers were told the price of each wine, and their taste test showed that their pleasure center recorded greater activation with the most expensive wine and subsequently less with each less expensive wine. Same wine, five different stories, but their brain recorded the actual experience. A peak experience creates a peak memory, a retrospective reevaluation of a better experience than even at the time. And I want to look at a third thing with you before discussing. One is timing, which is really to say the structure of the fee. There are three times you can pay for a product or a service: before you have it, during the time you use it, or after. Now, some creative studies have been done to determine what timing has to do with the amount of payment and the enjoyment of the experience, both. With prepayment, the average participant spends more and enjoys it more, about 50% greater in many cases with prepayment. If you pay each time, you have to think about payment each time. Remember, payment giving up money is painful. We tend to avoid pain, paying, and seek pleasure, benefits. Moving from paying after to paying before changes choices as well as subjective experience. You're willing to pay more before, less after, and even less during consumption of the very same product. The timing makes a difference. When we pay for something before consuming it, there are a number of studies to this, like vacation prepayment, a number of prepayment kind of possibility. The actual consumption of it feels painless and therefore contributes to a good memory. There's no pain of payment at the time. Nothing is a la carte or per session charge, and not worrying about paying in the future. An example, how Amazon shifts the cost of shipping to prepayment with a yearly Prime membership costing $99, promising free shipping throughout the year, and free is in quotes here. Of course, it's not really free shipping, but each purchase throughout the year is viewed as free shipping without any additional pain of paying associated with each shipping. It feels free. Amazon even counts on this with each purchase by saying free two-day shipping with Prime. Where this has been studied and used extensively is prepaying vacations with all expenses included. People tend to enjoy the entire experience, not worry about credit cards. And credit cards make payment easier and less painful by consolidating an entire month's purchases into a single bill. With online payment, there's automatic accounting for both parties, making one decision initially to launch a process. So, in a brief summary here, what we're talking about is essentially designing a professional environment to a fee payment structure that works in the service of your client's benefit and your financial success. Both can be enhanced at the same time, or both can be compromised at the same time. And money is simply a medium of exchange. It allows us to exchange our time for our services. Forget about any symbolism that you attach to it, if you can. Treat it like a tool to get what you need, want, desire, and payment for your professional services. Be sure to charge what you're worth, because it will determine the perception of how much you're worth. And, as I mentioned, don't impose part of your money story on clients by deciding they might not be able to afford your services. So for all of this discussion, think about two things. Think about how you think about money, and think about what you're saying to your clients with your professional fees and how they hear it from you. Thoughts or questions? Is this making sense to you?
Okay, Dave, it's PJ. I've got two levels of mute going on here, star six, and I'm in muting my handset.
All right, you're good. Go ahead.
It sounds to me like there's a whole lot of psychology behind pricing, and that much of it depends upon the person receiving the information about the pricing and their perception of the price. That's kind of what I got from what you said.
Okay, I want to tweak that a little bit, because I'm emphasizing how much the perception is determined by the framing, the expectation, and the timing. So that's what we determine, and all we can determine is what we determine. Here's one more thing I want to add. You've probably heard from behavioral economics about the endowment effect. The endowment effect is that we value something more that we own even than the same item when we didn't own it. You know, for example, when we own something, not only do we believe it's actually worth more, but we also believe that other people are going to be seeing that and willing to pay for it. This is subjective. You know, an example, the prototype study here is people were given a $1 lottery ticket, and then within minutes, they were each asked, here's $1.50 that I'll give you for that lottery ticket. And to the surprise of the researchers, the vast majority of people would not do this. So what happens? For 2 minutes, you get your money back, you can buy another lottery ticket, and you made a 50% profit. Now, what happened? Well, once we experience something as ownership, we have a different relationship to it. We then think about, for example, in the lottery ticket, the loss aversion. What if we gave up that lottery ticket and it was a winning ticket? So thanks, no, for the $1.50. Now, in mentor coaching for the client, it's to take ownership of each session by determining and specifying the agenda and indicating a desired outcome of that session. Same with the overall coaching engagement, using a broader lens for a sense of ownership. Now, the more work we put into something, the more attached we become to it, whether it's a thing or a process, the more we feel we own it. People who hold coffee mugs in their hands for 30 or more seconds are willing to pay twice as much as people who hold the same mug for 10 seconds or less. So the upshot here is be sure if you do a sample session, it lasts at least 30 seconds or longer. So this is the endowment effect of having a trial offer or a sample session in mentor coaching or simply doing a monthly retainer. It endows us with a sense of ownership. We consider something more valuable. You've paid ahead. You've reduced the amount of pain. And now it's yours. There's an endowment effect. Once you have something in possession, then there's a different relationship with it ongoing. And there's also a component of this is virtual ownership. You know, this has been studied when two bidders are at an auction and the bidding gets prolonged, they both have in their minds that they own it, so they're willing to go higher than they would have in a different state because they have a sense of virtual ownership. They've already placed this object in their house. The longer negotiations go on, the more willing someone is to pay for this virtual ownership effect. I once had a guy who sold condos in college towns who said he would tell the prospective buyer, just tell your daughter she's got a great place to live when she goes to college. And he said not a single dad would be the goat then and disappoint his daughter saying she couldn't afford it. So there are applications and there are applications. Think of this, though, in terms of the application of your fee structure and the benefit, in my view, of charging a monthly retainer, having that paid in advance, having it regularly recurring each month so that you have an automatic record of it. You don't have to invoice and bill and all that kind of stuff. So those are some thoughts that support one point of view, and there are many, and this is just simply one structure. We have just 2 or 3 minutes. Other thoughts or questions?
This is Lauren. I just wanted to piggyback to what you're saying. So I only charge a monthly retainer, and I will only take a client who's willing to commit to work with me for a minimum of 3 months. And the reason why I do that is people come to see me, they've tried either traditional therapy or whatever. And my philosophy and what I share with them is that I can't help them change in less than 90 days. So my policy is, yes, I'd love to work with you, and I have a requirement and a minimum of a 3-month commitment. And what I also like about that is when I get the money up front, as you said, they're fully invested. They're going to show up. They've paid for the money. And then they actually start seeing change right away, but especially that mid-month, that second month. You know, we're starting to do some deeper, kind of coaching and work. And I've never, when you state it clearly, as you, we've done a lot of work around this, and succinctly, I rarely have anyone say, they won't do it that way. It's kind of like going to the dentist. They say, you've got to pay now. I never argue my payment plan with them. So I think a lot of it is from my own personal experience in the past with my own fears of either being rejected or my fears of not liking my policy.
Thank you for sharing that, Lauren. That's great. There's an analogy by a behavior economist, Dan Ariely, who I correspond with. He said the per session fee is analogous to if you want someone to, if you want to really lose weight dieting, charge them by the bite. They'll cut back a lot. Okay, other thought, we got just a minute now. I know that's probably not enough. Other thoughts, thanks so much, Lauren. I appreciate that. Other thoughts or questions? Well, I hope this has been beneficial. There may be thoughts or questions for those who are listening to the recording. I know that a number of you have mentioned that you couldn't make it. Thanks so much for all of your input. Yes.
Dave, it's Jerry. Did you say that you were going to attach a white paper to?
No, I said this was a verbal white paper.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm also interested in your ideas for a topic or a focus for next mentor group. So if you have any ideas, fire it away. This is how this evolved. So thanks very, very much. It's great to be together. The reunion is one of my favorite parts of the year. Thanks so much for all of your input, and apologies to those of you who had difficulty calling into the telebridge. If there's any way I can be of help to any of you, I hope you'll let me know. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you.
Guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely.